So you've gone no contact with your narcissist, and now you're starting to doubt yourself. Sometimes it feels like maybe it was the wrong idea, or maybe you know it was right logically, but something in you keeps dragging you back. What is it? Why does it happen? And how do you get through it? This involves removing yourself from the narcissist's life. You stop seeing them. You stop speaking to them. You don't interact with them at all. This allows you to clear your life of the negative energy they bring into every room.
There are some really important things that you have to remember about no contact. It's really important to remember, for example, that narcissists don't give us closure.
Anytime you go through a breakup or a divorce with a normal person or a healthy person, you may struggle to make sure you have closure. Some therapists will even ask you to reach out to that person and find a way to discuss whether or not you have feelings left for each other and how to deal with them from here. However, when we're talking about narcissists, this is a whole other ball of wax. When you're going through a general breakup, they say that if you have even just a small amount of hope left that the relationship can be recovered, then you can't really recover from the breakup. When we're talking about narcissists, they do more harm than your average bear when it comes to breaking up. They might do something like a smear campaign or stalking or some other way of hurting you. In fact, it's more common than not. Not only do narcissists not give closure, but they also tend to cause more harm than other people in breakups and divorces. So why don't they do closure? Well, let's just put it this way. Narcissists tend to see people as one way or another, black or white. You know, there's no gray area. So either they love you or they hate you. You're either worthy or you're totally and completely worthless. And as you know, narcissists have this way of devaluing us and making us feel like we deserve nothing, like we're worth nothing. It's a common tactic.
Are you in a relationship with someone who makes you feel miserable all the time? Do you find yourself hanging on, hoping against hope that this person will change? Have you become isolated and lost touch with a lot of your friends because of this person? Have you found yourself binge-watching YouTube videos about toxic narcissists and wondering if this is what you're dealing with? Put your life back on track with No Contact, a drug-free way to take back your life. When the crunch of this person's tires in the driveway make your heart drop and sends you into a state of panic? When you find yourself feeling alone, even in a room full of people? When you're so emotionally exhausted that you go numb? When you find it hard to enjoy even the best parts of your life because of the dark cloud that seems to follow you around? If you've struggled with a toxic person before, if you've tried therapy, self-help, changing everything about yourself and nothing seems to make this toxic person change. If you've started wondering if you're crazy and you've had it confirmed by a narcissist in your life, now there's No Contact, the most effective alternative to most common toxic relationships. Independent studies have shown that No Contact's unique properties stimulate the brain's neurotransmitters more gently than the typical toxic relationship. Several study participants reported relief of narcissistic abuse symptoms within as little as 2 weeks. You deserve to feel the sunshine, to feel present in the moment, to have energy, to be yourself again. You deserve a toxic relationship alternative when nothing else has worked. Though users of No Contact experience less side effects than we find with toxic relationships, side effects may still include fear of change, fear of the future, nervousness, temporary confusion, temporary euphoria, and temporary increase in anxiety while you get used to not being a source of narcissistic supply. Studies show that No Contact is the best option for surviving and thriving after a toxic relationship. Using No Contact on a consistent basis has shown a significant increase in success, happiness, and personal fulfillment. For those who share children with a toxic person, low contact is a suitable alternative. Ask your doctor if No Contact is right for you.
So whether you end the relationship with the narcissist or the narcissist ends the relationship with you, at this point you will become worthless to the narcissist when they decide they're all done with you. Maybe you hurt them. Maybe they think that makes you worthless. Maybe they've decided they're too good for you and that makes you worthless. Whatever the case may be, this might lead them to do smear campaigning and much more. They like to humiliate people after relationships. The narcissist will generally do one of two things. They'll either completely humiliate you and tell you and the rest of the world how much you hurt them and how terrible that you are, or they'll just disappear and fall off the planet for you. Either way, you know, they ghost you. Either way, you're left spinning and going, what the heck just happened? Sometimes they don't do closure because you don't matter to them, and other times they don't do it because they want you to think that you don't matter to them. But either way, it's almost never that a narcissist gives anyone a proper form of closure at the end of a relationship.
And so a lot of times, no contact might feel really unsatisfying to us because we feel like we need closure. And that's when it's really important for you to create your own closure. I think one of the reasons that no contact is so difficult is because we actually are addicted to narcissists. We have a trauma bonding situation where we actually feel physically addicted to them. It is
Basically, what happens as a result of ongoing cycles of abuse, thanks to a narcissist in this case. During the abuse cycle, you go through intermittent different kinds of reinforcement. So you either get a reward when you do with the narcissist once, or you get a punishment when you don't, just like a dog. What happens is that this cycle of reward and punishment creates extremely powerful emotional bonds between the two of you, and that makes it difficult for you to even think about change.
Trauma bonds happen in any toxic relationship. They tend to be kind of strengthened by inconsistent positive reinforcement or intermittent reinforcement. So what that means is that mostly things were difficult. Mostly things weren't great, but every now and then something awesome would happen, or the narcissist would do something that would make you feel kind of good, kind of warm and fuzzy inside. And in an effort to obtain that again, you would stay around in the relationship. In the beginning, it probably happened more often than not. And as time went on, the positive reinforcement most likely became further spaced out. So less of it per negative incident.
Even though the relationship started off in a love-bombing place where everything was awesome, we were being idealized, before we knew it, we were being quickly devalued, quickly discarded, or falling into that cycle of idealized, devalued, discarded, idealized, devalued, discard. This led to our finding ourselves under the control of the narcissists in our lives. And before we knew it, we couldn't move. We couldn't do anything, and we found ourselves stuck. The fact is that being with a narcissist or any type of toxic person can literally destroy your life. But what is it that causes a narcissist to do these things to us? They don't have empathy, so they don't really care how they affect us, and they're very self-focused, so they only act in ways that help them get what they want. So sometimes they're nice and they're kind to you because it helps them get what they want. Other times they're total jerks to you, but it's because it helps them get what they want, or because at that moment you are not the one who can help them get what they want. You see, they use their supplies, the people in their lives closest to them, as narcissistic supply. They use them as emotional dumpsters, and they just genuinely don't care how those people feel. But regardless of the reason that they do it, the outcome of that type of abuse, that type of treatment, it's the same for everybody. Up to a point. You suffer. The worst part is, because of the addiction factor and all this other stuff, we find ourselves afraid to walk away or unwilling to walk away from these abusers. Why does that happen? Here's the thing. Love, in general, affects the same part of the brain as any other kind of drug. No joke. And when we're talking about a toxic relationship, we almost become stuck directly to that partner by our own brains. This is where our brain betrays us in keeping us safe and healthy.
So this is something we need to remember when we're going through no contact. It's sort of like detox for us in a way. And in fact, some people, if they do go no contact, they will almost feel physical withdrawals, much like an addict of drugs or alcohol would feel. So when we're talking about narcissists, the no contact rule means you don't see that person, you don't speak to that person, you don't visit that person, you don't send gifts, you don't call them.
Basically, what that comes down to is that when you go no contact with a narcissist, you end all contact with that person. And you do this by, number one, you stop taking the narcissist's phone calls. Number two, you block them on social media networks. Number three, you do not encourage or schedule visits with them. And number four, you stop seeing, speaking to, and otherwise interacting with the narcissist. Now, if you have children together, this might be slightly different. You may end up doing what they call parallel parenting and low contact, which means you only engage with the narcissist in regard to your children and the business of raising them or picking up or dropping off. You don't engage on any emotional level.
You don't do anything that reminds them that you exist. And in fact, you actively avoid any sort of contact with that person. Well, why do we do this? We do this because it prevents the narcissist from actively manipulating us and actively abusing us. It is one way that we can start to really take back our lives.
Dana, what are your thoughts about that?
You know, I think going no contact, it's a lot like kind of falling forward, and it's easy to slide back into. Sometimes we don't even want to. Like, we might have to talk to them for some sort of reason, and then they just won't. They just keep pushing contact, or a lot of people fall for the false promises of change, or they, you know, nostalgia or hope kind of set back in, and then then they're like, nope, the, you know, things were great for a week. And then the abuse started up again. And then they get really down on themselves. And I think this is just one of those experiences in life that we just have to really triple up our level of self-compassion. And we just, sometimes we just have to go around that mountain a few times to really make sure that, yep, this is indeed painful. Like, I don't want to be here. I can't be here.
If I'm going to give you advice on how to move on from here, mm-hmm. I would say, first of all, stop beating yourself up about it, right? I mean,
yeah.
We've all done it on different levels. When you go through something like this, when you go through a toxic relationship, you're being abused regularly, mentally, especially psychologically, otherwise, I think what people miss is that they don't always see that there's this chemical addiction or this chemical connection with these people. So it's the same area of the brain that is affected by drug addiction and alcohol addiction.
It's the same kind of, it's that behavioral shaping, that modification of like intermittent reinforcement. And it really is like you would use the analogy a while back about it's like quitting a heroin addiction.
Yes.
And it very much is like that.
Yeah. So it's normal for you to want to go back. It's normal for you to feel the urge, even though logically you're like, I don't want to be with this person because they abuse me. This other part of you, first of all, we have abuse amnesia. The longer we're away, the less we remember about the bad stuff and the more we remember about the good stuff. This kind of stuff actually is true with childbirth as well.
Yes.
You know, and that's probably why we keep going as a species, because if we remembered every second of all of that, might not be so popular. I think after you forgive yourself, then you just have to get back on the horse, on the wagon, whatever you want to call it. You have to just start again. We never really fail, in my opinion, until we stop starting, okay? Mm-hmm. Because we mess up sometimes, whether we're talking about eating or exercising or no contact people or drug addiction or alcohol addiction, whatever it is that we're struggling with, we can overcome it. But sometimes we have to start and start and start. Start. And that's okay. I mean, give yourself a break. But at the same time, don't give yourself so much of a break that you're like, well, I'll just go back for a couple of years and it'll be cool. Because that's not the case. Keep mm-hmm. starting. Keep going.
Like you were saying, there's no sense in us, you know, beating ourselves up about it. If we can replace that judgment that we feel about our behavior and replace it with curiosity, you know, weight loss, a toxic relationship, you know, what have you. When we go around that mountain, I think it is helpful to take a step back and while we're being compassionate with ourselves, to be curious about, okay, like, why did I go back? Like, what happened here? Like, what was the pull? What could I do differently? How can I set myself up for success next time? It's just that process of moving forward in all of this. And I think with moving forward, it's really helpful to have other things, because when we're addicted to something, it's that rush of dopamine that we're addicted to. That's what feels good. That's why, you know, junky food tastes good. That's why it feels good in the moment. That's why going back to toxic people feels good in the moment. It's that rush, you know, it's that rush of dopamine. And if we can get that dopamine in other more healthy ways, then it's going to decrease our dependency on just getting it from them. Exercise, having a support system, getting out there, having fun, or at least being around other like empowering, nourishing people. It's really difficult. I think we're hardwired for consistency. And it's really difficult. Change is difficult anyhow. And we're social creatures. Even if we're introverts, we're still kind of biologically hardwired to seek out other people. And if this abusive person is our only other person in our life, or like 90% of our life, it's really difficult for a person to walk away from that. You know, meetup.com, I'm a big fan of that website. Getting together with different people around things that are actually enjoyable to you, building up that support system. This is something a person can do even before they leave.
Good idea.
It just makes it so much easier to have kind of a plan in place for getting those needs met, those support needs met.
And simple things like gratitude practice. If you practice gratitude mm-hmm. daily, it makes a huge difference, because here's the thing, dopamine is the feel good thing. Right? It's the mm-hmm. feel-good neurotransmitter or whatever. So if you can do things that you know will make you feel good, in addition to everything that Dana said, which is entirely accurate, if you can think about things that make you feel good, like even just laughing at a movie or a TV show that you love, or being grateful, because if you can feel gratitude to the point that it gives you that little tingle right here, you know, like I'm so happy and grateful that I have my cats. I'm so happy and grateful that I have this, or whatever it is that makes you smile and laugh. Think about those things, or think about things that make you feel happy and strong and secure and whatever. Those things can help to kind of increase increase that production as well. You're trying to rewire basically your brain sort of to stop wanting to stop at the narcissist turn off, you know, let it go on past that to happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing about gratitude that I absolutely love is it's a really great antidote to fear.
Yes.
And if we're fearful about finances, about what the future may hold, about finding love again, about any of these things, being grateful for the little things really does help to just bring a person into the moment. I'm just such a huge fan of that. It's amazing what that can do. And that's something that doesn't take a lot of time, doesn't cost any money. And it just makes, when we flood our system with like appreciation, it's all of those feel good chemicals and just the realization of there's still so much that is right with your life right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Self in the same way that you would help a friend or a child. So for example, let's just say that somebody you loved was addicted to a drug and you knew that even one little tiny bit of that drug would instantly reactivate their addiction and you would lose them again. It's like that.
So at this point, I'm going to explain exactly how being with a narcissist is like a drug.
Even in healthy relationships, when you first fall in love, you might find yourself kind of feeling very ecstatic and excited and hyped up, right? It's a lot like taking a drug, isn't it? When you first start using drugs or drinking alcohol, you get that elated feeling, you feel all within. You're like, where has this been all my life? Well, the same kind of thing happens in a relationship. And at the beginning, whether it's healthy or not, you will find yourself feeling just like that. But then what happens is that as the thrill of the newness wears off, you start to think you need the other person just to breathe, just to survive. It becomes a psychological dependence. We can literally become addicted to a person just like we can become addicted to food, alcohol, or drugs. What it all boils down to is that it's sort of a way of letting go of our personal responsibility for our own feelings. It's almost a way that we kind of abandon ourselves a little bit as individuals. But here's the thing. There's science to this. There's an actual scientific reason that this happens. So the first thing I want to, how is it that addiction changes your brain? Because that's what happens here.
So how exactly does addiction change our brain? Well, our human brains are very complicated and they're wired in such a way that we are rewarded when we do something that feels good. Whether we exercise or we eat something that tastes good or we do other pleasurable types of things that are directly linked to our health and our survival trigger, when those things happen, our brain releases a neurotransmitter that's called dopamine. This not only makes us feel great, but it kind of helps us keep going forward and doing what we're doing. So it teaches us to keep doing that behavior. Now here's the bad part of this whole deal. Drugs, alcohol, toxic relationships, they trigger that same part of the brain, the reward system, but they do it to a more extreme extent, which causes our brains to almost literally be rewired in some really negative ways. So for example, if you take a drug, well then your brain is going to release a lot of dopamine, a lot more than would be released otherwise. If you, say, did a workout or some other natural pleasurable type behavior, your brain's going to then overreact. It's going to reduce the dopamine production in order to sort of normalize these big sky-high jumps that the drugs have created. And this, my friend, is exactly how the cycle of addiction begins.
So essentially, all of this happens and you kind of lose yourself. You know, I wrote a book called Your Love is My Drug, and there was a scientific basis for that. Maybe that person's love is your drug. Maybe your partner decides to go away on a weekend with friends, all girls or all guys, whatever, and you're not invited and you think that you've done something wrong and that they're punishing you for this. Maybe you're not doing your daily things that you need to do, like laundry, pay your bills, take care of all the things, because you're so busy being in love with this person or missing this person. Maybe you only feel alive when this person is around, or maybe you don't get anything done at work because this person is always on your mind. Maybe you feel like your life just has no meaning unless that person's around. Does any of this ring true for you? Well, there's a really good reason for it.
Studies tell us that using drugs regularly can really limit your ability to feel any pleasure. And we know the same is true for being in a relationship with a narcissist or another type of toxic person. So over time, the drug use and or the toxic person and their abuse will lead us to produce much smaller releases of that feel-good chemical, dopamine. Well, of course, that means that our reward center in our brain becomes far less receptive to feeling anything good, any kind of pleasure, enjoyment, anything, whether from drugs or from love or any other everyday source, such as various activities that you used to enjoy or other relationships, things like that. So once your brain has been altered by this abuse, whether it's a physical or emotional or drug abuse, it requires more and more of any sort of stimulation, whether it's drug stimulation or more ups and downs in the relationship in order to function at even a baseline level. Well, that leads us on to feeling withdrawal, because when we become physically addicted, physically dependent on a substance or a relationship, well, if we stop dealing with that person or we stop taking that substance because we can no longer stand the abuse or because we're no longer having access to the drug or the person, we find ourselves in withdrawal. And in some cases, when you go into withdrawal, in general, you feel horrible. You feel sad, depressed, out of it, sick even. So how does your brain manage that? Your brain being addicted to anything or anyone causes changes in your behavior. So there are physical, measurable areas of your brain that are really critical to judgment, learning, memory, decision making, and even behavior control. Now, in various studies, scientists have said that these changes literally alter the way your brain works, and this could explain why you are compulsively, destructively drawn to this person.
So this relationship is changing the way your brain works. It's changing the way your life works. It's taken away your ability to feel true pleasure.
They are literally like a drug to your body right now because of the trauma bonding. You have to look at it like you're detoxing from a drug. It hurts. You cry a lot, shake a little. But once you get through that first, you know, week or two, it gets a little better. And then you work on your intentional healing and it gets better and better. It's not going to be easy. But the one thing I did wrong in my case was I didn't let myself fully experience my emotions because I had a kid and because someone in my life was telling me that these are the choices you have made. That's another story for another day. But I felt that I needed to be strong and not fall. And I should have processed my emotions at that time. I didn't do it till much later. And so what I would say to you now is that let yourself cry if you need to cry. Let yourself scream and break things and throw things or whatever. Don't call him. Don't message him. You know, find yourself a no contact buddy if you need to. Somebody that has your back and that you can call or text at 3 o'clock in the morning and just say, look, I'm really dying to text this person. I'm really dying to call this person. And even if they don't respond right away, they know that you might do this and they're okay with it and they can respond as soon as they're able to. So I would suggest pattern interrupt if you can't stop in the moment.
Have you ever been telling a story and someone interrupted you with a question? And even though you've told the story 1,000 times, you can't recall where you were in the story because someone interrupted you with a question? That's an example of a pattern interrupt. So you have kind of a momentary lapse. You sort of get a little confused. You're like, wait a minute, where was I again? It's almost like a little form of amnesia, right? Let's say, have you ever done this where you go into a room to get something or do something and you get there and you're like, wait, what was I doing again? Or you started to do something and you got interrupted and then you couldn't remember what it was you were doing in the first place. Here's the thing. When you find yourself in that kind of confusing state, it actually opens you up for something else. And that is a new perspective, a new form of clarity if you choose to use it that way. You can interrupt your pattern when you're feeling just blah, like you can't do anything, you feel stuck. So for example, one of the really best ways to do that is like if you're feeling overwhelmed, let's say by housework, you might find yourself just sitting there looking around going, oh my God, how am I going to get all this done, right? And then you do nothing because of your overwhelm. Well, that's a habit. Next time you're sitting in your house and you're looking around going, oh my God, how am I going to get all this stuff done? Do one thing. Just go clear off a table or clear off a little tiny spot, clean out your sink, make your bed, something small. And you'll find that your pattern of thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? I can't do this, is interrupted. And you actually might end up changing your whole life with that one move. So what are a few things that you can do to interrupt your patterns then? One thing you could do is maybe step outside, you know, on the front porch, pace back and forth for 5 minutes, come back in, whole life changes, whole perception changes. Another thing you can do, we've talked about before, do the four corners technique, where you follow the four corners of your phone or your TV or your wall or your door, any square, follow the four corners clockwise for 2 minutes with your eyes. It changes your perception somehow. Try taking a different route to work one day, or try not watching TV for a week, or try laughing. Sometimes just watching a funny video on YouTube or a funny show or a funny movie can change your whole perception. Change whatever it is. Just do something different than you normally do. One of the simplest pattern interrupts is an affirmation. So what I like to do is if I find myself thinking really negative thoughts or feeling unhappy or feeling miserable, what I like to do is go, nope, I now cancel that thought and replace it with this affirmation of my true divine desire, and then I say what it is I really want as opposed to what I really don't want. It makes a huge difference in the way that I perceive my life. And that, my friend, your perception is where change begins. You bring about what you think about. So carefully cultivate what you're thinking about.
But those techniques do not resolve the emotions that go with it. They simply stop you from making that call or stop you from breaking. It's a way to calm down. It's a way to change your thought patterns, but then you still must deal with the emotions. So I suggest, you know, one thing I like to do is have people write a letter to the narcissist to say all the things you didn't get to say, because part of the thing is you didn't get good closure from this person. So write a letter, say all the things that you need to say, and get all those emotions out on paper and really let yourself feel them. And then when you're ready, you can move forward.
It does get better. I promise. Little bit by little bit, day by day, it gets a little better. I promise you it does.
So here's the flip side of this. A lot of survivors that have been out for a while and they've healed to a certain degree, they're like, come on over, the water's fine. I think there's this space in leaving that people don't often talk about. And I see some people in the chat that are struggling with this right now. They're like, I'm having nightmares, this abuse amnesia, like I'm really struggling right now. I thought leaving would end all of this and I'm still struggling. Like, and so a lot of survivors are like, you know, life is going to be so much better when you leave this person. And that is oftentimes, that's true in the long run. But there's a short-term, you know, real difficult part, especially if a person doesn't have some sort of degree of support system there. It can really just be kind of this like long, dark road that a person has to walk. And I don't think that that's talked about enough.
I think that when we say you must go no contact, a lot of people feel almost threatened by that because of this. They can maybe see this, or they've done this before, where they go through that, right? Where they get to the other side and they're like, it's nothing great over here. But I would say one of the things I found when I did it, when I went no contact the first time and the second time, mm-hmm. well, the first time with my ex, the second time with my narcissistic parent, I found that while the first few weeks were a little bit torturous, it got better with intentional vibration management or the healing process. You know, as it went, it got better. And one of the things I think all the time that I messed up on a little bit when I first went through this myself was, instead of shoving down the emotions and being like, okay, I have to be happy now, a lot of people forget, and I forgot at first, to feel the emotions and let them out and let the crying happen and let the screaming and whatever you need to go through happen once you get out of that relationship. And I thought, and I think, that going through that and then finally allowing the emotions to come out and wash over you and then work through them, I think that's a big piece of the healing, even though it sucks. It's a big piece of the healing because it opens your mind and your thoughts to the possibilities. Because when you're in the relationship, you end up not being allowed to feel all that stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I didn't feel like my feelings were valid because I didn't even know what had happened. And so this derailed me for years. And I have always been kind of more Buddhist in my beliefs. And I really got involved in Buddhism. And so all of these emotions that I wasn't dealing with ended up, I was hiding, not knowing, not, this is not a conscious thing at all, but those emotions were hiding behind a lot of more of like my beliefs about kind of non-attachment and basically being wantless and needless, kind of with Buddhism. And so I wasn't dealing with any of these emotions because I just didn't know what was going on or anything. I just wasn't validated at all and didn't even realize that I needed validation.
Right. And I think I was in a similar boat because even when I went no contact with my narcissist parent, I had just barely started to scratch the surface of understanding NPD and what it was. I didn't know the term no contact. I just did it instinctively. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then as time went on, I realized, and there were a lot of emotions in both of those cases.
What do you do if you have to be in contact with a narcissist because you're going through a divorce or a child custody thing or whatever it is that you're dealing with? You have to deal with them for some business reason, whatever. How do you deal with them? Well, start here. So obviously you want to be incredibly careful in this case. And you have to understand that it might take a little while to feel strong in this situation, but if you follow these few rules, it will help. First of all, number one, you have to make sure that you never act sincere to the narcissist. That doesn't mean that you have to tell a fake all the time, just like that, oh my God. It means that you have to keep everything on a very surface level. Be polite, like you would be if you were in a customer service position and you had a rude customer. Speak to them calmly, without emotion, and without serious connection. Be superficial and insincere. It will feel weird to you, but it will be worth the effort, I promise. The next thing you want to do is, again, be polite. I wouldn't say friendly, I would say polite.
And make sure the conversation doesn't get too deep and it doesn't deviate from whatever your purpose is with that person. Also, never mention your feelings to that person about anything. They don't get to know that anymore. The next thing you want to do is appear to be completely thrilled and awesome in life. Don't give them any details about your life, but also don't seem miserable or unhappy. Because just like a vampire can smell blood, a narcissist can smell misery. And they'll just want to hurt you more. They'll want to poke the wound, as it were. Don't give them that opportunity. Don't mention the past and don't do anything that's unethical on your part. So what I'm saying is enforce your boundaries and don't try to scam the narcissist. It's not worth your energy or your time and it's bad karma anyway. So why do we break no contact when we mean to stay no contact? Logically, we understand it's a bad idea, but what causes us to break it? Well, we kind of touched on it a little bit in the segment with Dana, but what it comes down to is that breaking no contact is very similar to sort of a relapse of a drug addiction or an alcohol addiction. It's very difficult to create any serious change in your life, and this is no different. The thing is that we have a serious emotional attachment to this person, whether we like it or not. And so going through a no contact situation can make it feel very painful, can make it feel like somebody's ripping our face off. But in reality, if we get through the pain, we will find our lives being 100% better in the long run. Like Dana and I talked about, it's not always so easy. But it's real. And it's something that when you can get through it, you can recognize you don't want to go back to it. The way you feel in this moment, I want you to sit down and I want you to write it down paragraph by paragraph. Write down every feeling you have about it, how you wish you didn't do it, and how you feel about yourself in this moment. I want you to forgive yourself, but I want you to take that piece of paper and I want you to put it somewhere that you don't lose it. And then if you ever feel tempted again, I want you to pull it out and remind yourself why you don't want to do this. Remember that narcissists don't create meaningful change in their lives. Sometimes they may appear to change in order to get something they want or to have something that you have or to get something out of you. It's almost always about getting something for their change. But that change is always temporary and it's always superficial. So don't expect that somehow some miracle is going to happen and your narcissist is going to be different than the rest and actually create positive change. You deserve better than that. Remember that. This brings me to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, have you gone no contact with a narcissist? Did you break no contact? And if you did break no contact, how did you get back on the wagon? And what did you do? If you didn't break no contact or you haven't yet broken no contact, what are your thoughts about all of this? Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below and let's talk about it. This is kind of an important deal, you know? So make sure that you, if you have a minute, share your experiences because another survivor might be able to read something that you wrote and it could really change their life today. And I think that's good karma if we're talking about karma. That's all I've got for you right now. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm leaving for you right here and right here. And while you're here, hit that subscribe button right there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. Now, don't forget, you're never alone. You've always got your Spanily. I'll see you soon.